Joel's connecting to audio. Hi, Joel. I don't think you can hear me yet. I'll stay very still.
Stare at him. Don't worry.
Hi, Joel. How are you?
I'm good, Adam. How are you? Well, finally, I got in. This was like, you know, my computer was like, nothing was working. The little error was all over the place, and it was going, you know, it was like, it was spastic. It was like, just shoot me now. Why bother? You know, it was just awful. So
no problem at all. It's good to be with you in San Francisco.
You're in San Francisco. No, I'm not. I'm actually outside of Washington, D.C., but the image of the Capitol I want to put up is copyrighted, and I don't choose to violate their copyright because there's actually a law firm somewhere out in San Francisco, as a matter of fact, that specializes in finding people that do that, and they send them a nastygram that says you owe us $3,500 or $35,000 or something, and I don't want to get into a fight with them, so I just avoid that. So
yes, I understand. That's that. Yes, there are a lot of measles out there.
Yep. Hi, everybody. I'm Joel Whitaker, the editor of Kane's Beverage News Daily and the host of the Beverage Barons podcast series. And today we're talking with Adam Van Gooten, who is the co-founder and chief executive officer of Highclere Castle Spirits. If you're a follower of Downton Abbey, the name Highclere Castle may mean something to you because it was where the where the series was filmed in many respects, and the setting for it and all of that good stuff. So I'm going to let Adam explain all of this. I'm just going to make one comment, and that is that I really admire Lord Carnarvon, who is the owner of Highclere Castle, both the spirits brand and the property itself, because he has really figured out how to monetize that property probably better than anyone else in all of England, except perhaps King Charles, who there were hints in a couple of papers in the last couple of days. And we're recording this on Friday of the week in which Queen Elizabeth died. There were hints that King Charles himself has done a pretty good job of becoming a real entrepreneur in his own right. So Adam, welcome. And tell us about yourself. Tell us how you got involved with Lord Carnarvon, and tell us all about Highclere Castle Gin.
Yeah, sure, Joel. It's good to be here with you. And thank you for the invitation to join you on this today. Well, my family goes back in the liquor business to the 1800s. And I found a renewed passion for it myself in my 20s, and built the first distillery in Connecticut to have been built in many, many decades, really since Prohibition. During Prohibition time, my family was quite active, we'll say, in New England. And I wanted a project. After that, local distillery did quite well as a regional brand, I wanted to go back to England, where my family's from, and a country I very much love and have a place in my heart for. And so I was looking to do a spirit project over there. And I was looking for a couple of years, really investigating where we could build a brand that had an incredible amount of authenticity and genuineness to it, and terroir, location, and land. And I was introduced to Highclere Castle the same way that 250 million other fans were, which was through Downton Abbey. And I had this crazy idea that maybe it would be a perfect setting to build a spirit brand from scratch. So I reached out to the castle that very next day after having the thought, and Lord Carnarvon called me. And 2 weeks later, I was on a plane to go to Highclere for the weekend. And that began kind of a wonderful friendship, which developed into a business partnership, where I believed very strongly that Highclere had the terroir and the story and the history and the heritage to give life to a spirit brand that really kind of encapsulates or distills out the truth of what Highclere really is, which is two dichotomies, right? It's the functioning estate and farm. In our case, the botanical gardens and all those beautiful ingredients available that are so perfectly added to a gin. And then you've got the inside of the castle, which very much functions as a proper English country home and has hosted many of the world's most famous and interesting people for hundreds of years. And Lord and Lady Carnarvon keep that tradition alive as well today. So Highclere Castle Gin really embodies those two parts of the spirit, in that we use the botanicals from the estate. We use citrus from the Victorian era orangery behind the castle. We use lavender grown in the walled monk's garden, which was planted by the Bishop of Winchester in the 9th century at Highclere. It's over 1,000 years old. And we're the first gin in the world to use oats in our recipe. And the oats are grown at Highclere quite famously in the world of thoroughbred racehorse feed. And so we are the first gin to use these oats, and these oats create this amazing, creamy, velvety, smooth finish to the gin that's unlike anything that exists in the spirits industry. And then, of course, we've got the bottle itself, which is the tall, striking, very powerful purple bottle with high shoulders, a nod to the main tower at Highclere, and purple being, of course, the color of nobility and the church. And the church was, again, the church owned Highclere and the estate for before the Carnarvons did, before the Herbert family, which is the Earls of Carnarvon did. And so it really represents every piece of Highclere that is special, that is rare, that is unique. And we endeavored to create a gin that was all of those things. And I think considering now that we've only been out in the market for a couple of years, and we've garnered over 70 international gold and platinum awards, and we're on the track to being the most awarded gin in the world, I think that we've accomplished the job quite well. Being featured in many of the finest hotels and Viking Cruise Line and the best restaurants and liquor stores of the world, I think we've accomplished the job. And so it's really a celebration of Highclere. I think it's a celebration of the spirit of Highclere, certainly in recognition, as you pointed out, of Lord and Lady Carnarvon's entrepreneurial zeal and a whole lot of vision and a lot of hard work.
So it's also a big change for your family from distilling during Prohibition, I would assume.
Well, I think my great-grandfather would have been probably pretty proud of this. I mean, before Prohibition, we actually had a very large legally operating distillery that we lost in the 1800s. One of my ancestors died on the Titanic, actually. And right around that time period, we lost this distillery because one of my family members tried to ship 800 barrels of whiskey to Canada and tried to avoid paying the taxes on it. So the U.S. government decided it was probably best that we didn't own a distillery, and they took it away. And then during Prohibition, we were back at it with a very famous hotel that we owned here in Connecticut on the Connecticut River with two steamship ferry boats that would do daily routes from Manhattan back to Connecticut. And they would hide the booze inside and then run the speakeasy from the basement. So when I discovered my own love for the spirits business, I was in my mid-20s. I traveled a bit of the world. I learned the craft of distillation. I studied it deeply, the science of it. And I fell in love with the whole method of, you know, from grain to glass, from the farm, from the field, and all the process, all the way up through throwing on a tuxedo and having an amazing Great Gatsby party and everything in between. And so I've never looked back, and I've been completely immersed in the liquor industry ever since, except for my little foray into the cigar industry in Nicaragua with Lord Carnarvon to design our Hiker Castle cigar.
And I was going to bring that up because you told me just before we started recording this that you all, in fact, do have a cigar product also. And that's when I said, I greatly admire his entrepreneurial instincts because it strikes me that he's figured out how to monetize every single aspect of that castle from having tourists come through some of the rooms, I presume. In fact, I know tourists go through a lot of the rooms there, which is the way a lot of the families that have those type of facilities make pay the taxes on them, if you will, onto getting it onto TV, having a movie made of the Downton Abbey story and so on. And then he's gotten into distilled spirits. He's got a working farm, of course. And now he's into cigars. You know, this is quite a I hate to use the word character, but that's quite a character. And I gather you're sort of the man, I don't want to say the man behind the scenes, but the man behind the scenes?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure how I would think of that. I mean, I think I'm in some ways, I'm an American.
Right hand man?
I'm an American entrepreneur with roots in England. And, I wanted to create a spirit brand and a cigar brand that came from a place of history and heritage. And Highclere's ready was a kind of fertile landscape for something like that. And Lord Carnarvon certainly had the vision when I presented these ideas to say, yeah, let's give it a go. I mean, the castle is responsible for many employees, and it's a very expensive endeavor, you know, to run the place. And Lord Lena Cadarvin have to be innovative. And she has been through the authoring of her books, which have been New York Times bestseller. And she's an incredible author. Lord Cadarvin is fundamentally a farmer. And that is really the main business at Highclere, outside of the fact that there are about 135,000 visitors per year. I think what I've done in a way is bring ideas that would allow us to bring Highclere Castle and its terroir and earth into homes and bars and restaurants and hotels around the world. And so so my job is kind of, in a way, I suppose, you know, I'm kind of playing the Great Gatsby American, the crazy American entrepreneur role, and Lord Lena Cadarvin are being Lord Lena Cadarvin and being responsible fundamentally for the estate and the success of the estate, so that we'll pass on for future generations to enjoy. And that includes, of course, their family and the next, you know, Lord Porchester and his children, but also also to all the people around the world that get to enjoy Highclere when they visit.
Sure. All right. So talk to us about the business aspect here, if you would. So you've got the gin, which I presume is a high level gin. There's going to be the natural temptation to want to come out with a mid-level gin and, you know, eventually have a complete range. Are you going to do that? Or maybe I should rephrase that. Do you see you all doing that, or do you see yourselves trying to maintain that high level, high class status for the product?
Oh, I mean, we spent over a year on the recipe alone. The custom bottle was about a year in development and cost a lot of money to design. We would never sacrifice the brand by offering something that we didn't feel. It's not about the end price, really. It's really about the quality of the product. Highclere retails for about $40 a bottle, so it's certainly not cheap. In fact, it skews on the higher end of gin brands that are even available to buy. But that's because, you know, we sacrifice absolutely nothing in the quality of what we're making. From the base of the gin alone is English wheat. The botanicals are from the estate. Everything about it is the highest quality or caliber of production and discernment that you could possibly have in a spirit. And so the problem, the price is the price because of the cost. And we would never endeavor to release something that wasn't to the Highclere standard. And that's of the utmost importance to us. If anything, it will get even more exclusive or limited, which speaks to a new product that we have coming out soon. But this flagship product, I couldn't see us being able to release something less expensive, because I couldn't see us releasing something that would emphasize quality less, or would perhaps be faster, cheaper, or easier to make, if that makes any sense to you.
It does. Now, you just hinted at a new product coming out soon. I'm a reporter, so I have to ask you, can you follow up on that? What about this new product? How much do you want to spill the beans here on this podcast?
Sure. Yeah. Well, this year is very exciting for us, in that it's the 100-year anniversary of the discovery of the tomb of King Tutankhamun by Lord Carnarvon's great-grandfather, the fifth Earl of Carnarvon. He left Highclere quite before the discovery in 1922, and spent many years investing there, he and Howard Carter, the archaeologist. And this year's the 100-year anniversary. So I really wanted to celebrate that in a big way, liquefy that again. So I had this crazy idea that we were going to take Highclere Castle gin and barrel age it. I was able to locate some 50-year-old Armagnac casks from a dear friend and investor of ours, an advisor, Raj Bhakta, the founder of Whistlepig Whiskey, who's a dear friend of mine, along with some Scotch barrels and some new American oak barrels. And so for the last 2 years, Highclere Castle gin, a high-proof version of it, has been sleeping in these casks. And what's coming out of it is absolutely sensational. So we're releasing about 2,000 cases in the US and UK around November 1st. Through the month of October, customers around the world will be able to reserve their bottle on our website in advance. It'll retail for about $99, but it's going to come out in a beautiful gold bottle. Catherine, would you grab me the gold bottle? It's in Pete or Renee's room. I'll show you the bottle. It's a very special gold bottle of the barrel-aged gin. We designed it to be kind of like something you might have discovered in the tomb of King Tutankhamun. In fact, we went so far down the rabbit hole, I even enlisted the help of two wonderful Egyptologists from Yale who are known on Instagram as vintage Egyptologists. They're quite cool people, Colleen and John Darnell, authors in their own right, who advised us on translating the hieroglyphs into Haikler Castle on the bottle, translated as Tahut Kat Hejet, which in ancient Egyptian would have translated to the great domain, she who is bright, she who is high, and she who is clear. So Haikler Castle. And so we've spared no expense on getting this product to be authentic, very rare and very special. And it, when we release this in November, 2,000 cases come out. We will never make it again. It's not something that's going to be a regular in regular production. And I've of course have spent the last year kind of playing with the flavor profile and ratios of the blend. And it's superb. It's a citrus forward, notes of whiskey, leather, spice. It's the color of dark kind of a deep champagne or maybe a Sauterne, almost the color of a nice rich Sauterne. Very, very rich, very, very citrusy, very, very, even elements of vanilla. Thank you, Catherine. Here's the kind of prototype bottle that we've just, we're going into production with for it. So it'll be quite pretty.
Oh, isn't that nice? That is really pretty. That's very nice.
We're doing the same cigar, actually, for a cigar brand that we've done for Haikler Castle, kind of very similar, called the Haikler Castle Sennacher. We found a box in the tomb and images of the boxes in the tomb of Tutankhamun. So we've replicated the box and we've surrounded it in hieroglyphs that spell out Haikler Castle. And so this very limited edition cigar will be coming out by Foundation Cigar as well in the coming couple months. It's going to be quite unique.
That is quite impressive. Adam, you've done well for yourself and for the lordship there. That's very nice. I find that connection to Kamen there very fascinating, because back in my high school days, I was absolutely enraptured with Egypt. My favorite course was ancient history, and we used a textbook that was about 60%, I would say, all about Egypt, and the rest was, of course, Rome and Greece. But you know, Egypt was the dominant topic in this textbook, and it was just a fascinating study. So I find it fascinating that the current Lord Carnarvon is related back to that exploration 100 years ago. And
that's special. You
know, it sounds like a very unique English family, quite frankly. And I'm not now surprised that they would be involved with all this other activity. So tell us how you convinced him, or did it take any arm twisting at all to get him to start down this entrepreneurial path?
Well, I think fundamentally Lord Lenny Carnarvon are entrepreneurs. I mean, they had the vision to allow Downton Abbey to film there to begin with. And in fact, Haikler Castle was the inspiration for much of the plot, because, the author Julian Fellowes of Downton Abbey, the creator of the show, is a friend of Lord Lenny Carnarvon. So I don't think either one of them suffer from a lack of entrepreneurial spirit. The way Lord Lenny Carnarvon tell it is, they were enchanted by the email that I sent. And that's really all that I know. So, I mean, I was just very forthright, very transparent. I had a vision. I'd been looking for a place to do it. I wanted an excuse to spend more time in England. I love the country and I feel very comfortable there. And I like returning regularly. So I wanted to do an English brand. And so then from there, I think it was really about the mutual assessment of whether or not I felt that I could enlist and utilize their partnership, and whether or not they felt I was competent enough to represent the castle and their family around the world through this product. And so, you know, it took a while to get to know each other, some months. Like I always say, any relationship worth having is built out of friendship, you know, business partnerships included. And, fast forward now 7 years we're very close. So very, very natural. Sometimes you find people on this planet that are very natural fits. It's fun to do things with. You're highly productive. You enjoy the journey, not just the destination. And I think we count among ourselves amongst a group that feels that way.
Well, that's terrific. So tell us a little bit about the business of the two products here now. You have distribution throughout the United States, or are you completely nationwide, or do you still have gaps you need to fill?
We're in about 30 US states and 7 countries. Although in e-commerce in the US, we cover about 40 US states and 27 EU countries. So we're in primarily high-end hotels, restaurants, cocktail bars, a lot of the big liquor store chains, the wonderful, Totals, ABCs, a lot of the wonderful mom and pop shops around the country in the UK that support us. Many great hotels throughout London. Viking Cruise Line is a special partner of ours, and we're the featured gin on there. And now looking at opportunities throughout Europe. I mean, we're currently in and growing in Denmark, Malta, the south of France, and Poland. We're looking at opportunities now in China and down in South America. So knowing the industry well, we did all of this in the last 3 years, 2 years of which was COVID. So that's I'm very proud of this team and what we've all accomplished and bringing this brand to life in a rapid fire way, considering the world was shut down in a pandemic.
Yeah, that's quite impressive, because a lot of people would not have made the strides that you made during that period. Are you looking to expand your distribution, or are you basically pretty satisfied with where you are in the United States and then again where you are overseas?
We're primarily focused on going deeper in the markets that we're in and doing a better job at customer service and building the brand and bringing the brand experience to everybody, all of our partners that we're currently with, that goes from our distributors to retailers and restaurateurs. So we have a lot of work still to do there, because we are a very new brand and the brand is just being discovered now by people around the world, and a growing following is happening daily, but we have a lot of work to do. That said, I think when opportunities come about that are very organic and feel natural, we do seize them. So for example, this month, a pallet of product is shipping to duty-free in Dubai. And so we're going to make that happen to that very discerning customer that's there buying alcohol, fine spirits. So when that happens in the US, we do the same. So it's not really about expanding as fast as we can expand. It's about, delivering the best quality product and service to our retailers and restaurants and the markets that we're in, until exciting opportunities pop up, and then we, of course, go for it.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. And are you looking to hire people, or are you pretty well staffed up to meet your current needs and your needs in, let's say, the next 2 years?
Yeah, we're desperately looking to hire people. We're having a real organizational strategy around this right now. We wanna hire anywhere between 5 and 7 sales managers around the United States. So we're about to be running some ads soon to try to identify some wonderful talent that we really need.
So describe the ideal sales manager that you're looking for.
Oh, gosh, that's a really great question, Joel. I think it's somebody who, I think it comes down to three real things. I think it comes down to work ethic. So that means incredible ambition, desire to build a brand and be part of a new brand, and all the steps that takes for it to be successful, which predominantly includes being in front of customers every day, all day, and really telling the brand story and tasting people on it and executing the brand plans. That's number one. Number two, I think, is having a level of charisma whereby you enjoy being with people and people enjoy being with you. You enjoy the journey of life. You're exciting to be around, and you appreciate being with people and what people mean. And I think the third part is having the common sense and knowing how to overcome obstacles quickly, and having the intellect to know what to do, when to ask for help, when to offer an out-of-the-box solution, how to do whatever it takes to be successful. So those would be the three pillars that I would define.
Well, not everybody has those three pillars. Unfortunately, I can guarantee you, good luck on finding the right candidates. They're out there, but not everybody has them. So, but if people do, they know where to go now. So that's a good definition. How about advertising and marketing? How are you approaching that? What is your your strategy on advertising and marketing?
We primarily focus on earned media. So we're very fortunate that this brand is it's desirable. You know, we're not another kind of, I always use the expression, I don't know if this brand exists, and I mean no insult if it does, but it's not another Beaver Creek vodka distillery that's churning out vodka till the whiskey's ready and kind of a pop-up thing. You know, this is a brand with history and heritage and a very deep story to tell. So earned media is our primary avenue. And we've been very lucky to be featured regularly by Forbes and Fortune and Robb Report and some of the finest magazines in the world. And also we do a lot of partnerships with influencers, people who are really unique, that have unique followings, that have this, that share the kind of same spirit that we do for discovery and for quality, exceptional high quality. And then of course, thirdly, we're very active on social media. We've got about 500,000 followers between Hiker Castle Gin and Hiker Castle that we speak to about the brand. And that's growing every day on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. So we're very active on social media with regular conversing with our customers around different ways to use Highclere, fun ideas, how things are done at Highclere, education, all that kind of stuff. So those are our main pillars of marketing. We don't do a lot of advertising. I kind of believe that advertising is a tax you pay for not being creative. So traditional advertising is not in my wheelhouse of normal spending of money. I'd rather spend it on people. I'd rather spend it on feet on the ground and guerrilla marketing tactics, or I'd rather spend it on, you know, finding out the next fun thing that we can do that bring attention to the brand.
Right. And that's a different strategy than many people have. So I'm almost to the end of the questions I have for you. So let me ask you a question to see if I've covered what I should have covered here. What did I not ask? And then I have a couple of follow-up questions, but what did I not ask that you wish I had asked?
Well, certainly you can buy Hiker Castle Gin at www.hikercastlespirits or hikercastlegin.com. And I recommend that people go to our website, check out some of our cocktails. They'll be able to put their name on a list to receive one of the bottles of the barrel-aged gin soon. And our cigars as well are available at Foundation Cigars or foundationcigarcompany.com. So anybody who's into either of those products can purchase or inquire more from us there.
See, that was the third question. That was the very end of the thing, which was, and tell us how they can reach out to you if they want more information. You jumped ahead on that. So here are the last two questions. Thinking back on your journey thus far with Highclere, what is the most notable success you've had? If you were advising somebody who wanted to emulate your success in the liquor business, what would you tell them was the most singular thing that you thought was the key to your success?
I think that we deeply have a focus on the customer, the buyer, and the end consumer. So like, we're scaling this and it takes time to do this, but the way we take care of our customers, our best customers, is so deep and so thoughtful and so real and so special. So whether it's a F&B director at X Hotel or the mixologist at Y Restaurant or this liquor store owner, or if it's the super fan that reaches out to us that we're able to do something a little extra for or respond to. I think that our customer service in terms of how we think about the customer goes above and beyond anything that I've seen in the world of liquor. And I could easily say other examples that have moved the needle in a bigger way in the short term. But I would say that as we look to who we are as people, who we are as a company, who we're becoming, and who we'll be in 10 years, I think that our achievement with regards to that is the thing that matters the most, an obsession over the customer.
And the obverse side of that question is obviously, as you look back over your journey thus far, what has been the biggest challenge you've had, the biggest difficulty, the thing you would warn somebody against?
I think that we probably grew a little bit too quickly in the beginning, and opening 27 states in the first 6 months of launching is something that Diageo would hardly try to do. And we did it because there was call for the product, but we did spread ourselves rather thin. And when the pandemic came, or like, you know, one disaster comes, which happens in business often, we had to pivot very quickly because we were overextended. And that would not be something that I would advise. Even with a brand like Highclere, I think we achieved the impossible, and I don't have any regrets. So I'm not saying I regret it, but I'm not sure I'd advise someone to do that. And I'm not sure I would do it myself again that quickly.
So I guess that you're endorsing T. Rowe Price's comment. You, of course, know the investment firm T. Rowe Price. You probably know that he was an investment advisor here in Baltimore, just a few miles up the road from where I'm talking. And he was quoted in the 1960s, he said, change is the business man's only certainty. So I guess you would endorse that because you don't know where the next disasters are going to come and you don't know when it's going to come. The only thing you do know is that something will happen.
Yes, absolutely. It's well said. It's quite accurate.
All right. So here's your last question. You've already answered it once, but you get a chance to repeat it. So, you know, take advantage. If somebody wants to reach out to you, how do they get a hold of you? How do they find out more about your brands? Go for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can order a bottle from our website anywhere in the EU, UK, or US, 40 states in the US where it's legal to ship. And you can also pick up cocktails, get content, check out our social media. Everything is available on our website at HeiklereCastleGin.com.
And the cigars?
The cigars are available on FoundationCigarCompany.com. All the Heiklere line, we have three now. We have the original, the Heiklere Castle Edwardian cigar. We have the Heiklere Castle Victorian cigar. And our newest release coming out now to honor the discovery of King Tutankhamun, the Heiklere Castle Sennacher cigar.
Excellent. Well, Adam Van Gooten, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. It's been a fabulous interview, I think. I think I'm going to, just because of the timing of everything, I think I'm going to try to get it up over this weekend versus wait till a little bit later. So I'll try to get up this weekend and I'll make sure that Kathy knows when it goes up. And thank you again for your time and good luck in the growth of Highclere Castle Gin and all your other ventures.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Very nice to meet you. And thank you for your interest and support.
Thanks. And good luck to you.
Thanks. You as well. Bye-bye.